Blog Talk Radio.
If I wasn't there when he called, he got mad.
She was always telling me how to dress.
Every time it was like, is he hitting on you?
She kept telling people I was cheating on him.
I didn't want to lose him.
Man, was she jealous.
It was like I couldn't go anywhere without him.
She didn't want me to see my friends.
He cares about me so much. I guess that's why he hit me.
Dating abuse can take many forms. Some so subtle, your teenager may not even know it's happening. That's why parents need to know what dating abuse is and how it can start, how you can spot the signs, and most important, how you can help prevent it. So talk to your teen today. Help them understand how dating abuse can happen and teach them to choose respect in all their relationships and to expect no less when they're dating. To learn more about the warning signs of dating abuse, go to ChooseRespect.org. A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention.
Respect.
Give it. Get it.
Good evening and welcome to a special edition of the show. This is Joy Keys. I'm your host. Yes, I know it's not Saturday. It's Thursday. But next week is, you know what, Valentine's Day. So I had to, like, figure out how to squeeze in a show about relationships because I know people get really anxious, a lot of anxiety around Valentine's Day. I mean, some people get anxious around holidays in general, I think, depending on the experience of that day. But Valentine's Day, it's like everywhere you look, there's red, there's balloons, there's hearts, chocolate kisses, this and that. And what if you don't have a Valentine's? Or what if you do? What do you buy them? Where do you go? How much is too much? If you just met the person, should you, like, do this lavish dinner? So today we're going to be talking with two therapists. The first therapist I'll introduce, her name is Jennifer Jones. She's a licensed clinical social worker, and she comes to us from the Council for Relationships here in Philadelphia. Good evening, Jennifer Jones.
Good evening.
And then our other therapist is Dr. Shane Perot. He should be calling in shortly. He's a clinical psychologist out in the D.C. Baltimore area, and so he should be calling in shortly. But I'll start off with letting you know you can follow me on Twitter, which is at Joy Keys, and you can become a fan on Facebook. Just look up Saturday Mornings with Joy Keys. And also send me an email. I would love to hear from you. My email address is SaturdaysWithJoyKeys@hotmail.com. If you're listening, you can call in. The call-in number is 646-929-0368. No question is off limits. I asked the therapist earlier, I said, are you uncomfortable talking about anything? And she said, no. I go, okay. So feel free to call in, or if you log on, you can ask the question in the chat room. Also, you can send me a tweet. I know some people were tweeting at me with a couple of comments and stuff. But Jennifer, let's start off in the beginning.
Yes.
The beginning is like family of origin, you know, who your caretakers were. You hear this statement, you know, well, that's why you're going out with John because, you know, he reminds you of your dad. Or,
right,
you know, that's
right.
why you're going out with Jennifer because she reminds you of your mom.
Right.
How true is this that your family of origin affects who you date and who you end up marrying?
Family of origin is really important. I mean, our family unit is basically our model, our first model of how intimate relationships start and kind of the process of the intimate relationship and what it looks like. So we end up kind of that our family of origin kind of gives us a model for the world so that the examples and the relationships that our parents have with one another and the relationship we have with them will kind of dictate in a sense how we are in the world and what type of partners we will initially be attracted to and want to pair up with.
I mean, how can you change it? I mean, for example, I had a friend, she grew up in a family that had drug addiction issues.
Mm-hmm.
She didn't drink, she didn't do drugs, but she found herself going out with guys who initially didn't appear, but as she got on, end up dealing with drugs.
Right,
and she
right.
kept saying, like, when I met them, they didn't look like they were on drugs. They weren't acting like they were on drugs.
Of course, of
How
course.
How come then all of a sudden they end up on drugs and, like, this keeps happening?
Uh-huh. It often, I mean, addiction is very interesting, and it creates a very interesting dynamic in a family system. And oftentimes the members that are around the person that is struggling with addiction often develop kind of a codependent relationship with the person that has the a disease of addiction, so to speak. And they can kind of, I guess, in a sense, you can kind of attract those type of people who kind of need certain things from you, who kind of pull those those feelings out of you, and you might be more sympathetic to certain situations. You might be, something like that in a sense. Does that make sense at all?
Yeah, that makes sense. I think mm-hmm. this is Dr. Pearl. Let me just check here.
Okay, sure.
Good evening.
Yes, it is. How's everybody doing tonight?
Good. How are
hey.
You,
Hey.
I am doing fine. Sorry, I had something run over, and I just could not end it, but I am here.
Well, thank you, and welcome back. For those of you who don't know, Dr. Pearl has been on several times before, about a variety of issues, ADHD, young black men, African-American fathers. So welcome back to the show, Dr. Pearl.
Well, thank you. I feel like I'm back home with you, Joe. Thank you very much.
Oh, thank you. So sweet. Well, we were just talking about family of origin issues, and Jennifer was saying that people can be attracted to people that remind them of their family of origin. Do you agree with that? And also the other question I had to her was, mm-hmm. how can you not continue to be attracted if it's a negative family of origin, like, you know, say drug addiction or abuse or neglect? How can you break the cycle of who you're attracted to?
I totally agree with that. I think it's one of the most amazing things. I think the challenge with it is that it's not really on a conscious level.
Mm-hmm.
If you'll allow me to use some of my psychology talk here for a second.
Sigmund okay.
Freud, yeah, I know, I hate to do that, but Sigmund Freud had this amazing theory called compulsive repetition,
mm-hmm.
where we have this experience and it happens in our childhood and we don't really figure it out, and emotionally we're actually kind of paralyzed, if not traumatized about it. So we keep re-experiencing it. We're helpless until we kind of figure out
mm-hmm.
what happened and how it's impacting us. So I have a lot of people that come in and they'll say, well, I don't like to fight. Okay, sure. I don't like to be an enabler. Okay, sure. Well, what you see as a kid? What you experience? Well, dad was this personality or mom was this personality. They were difficult. They weren't very healthy.
Mm-hmm.
And we all learn that we had to help them keep it together.
Yeah.
So does that pattern look familiar? Yeah, I'm dating that person now. I'm married to them. We have three kids together.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not very uncommon at all.
Yeah.
Okay, so
very, something very interesting, Joy, that mm-hmm. Dr. Pearl just mentioned is that we can, even though a situation or a relationship can be uncomfortable, we can stay in it because, in a sense, it is comfortable for us because we're used to those
exactly.
patterns and that interaction within our family of origin.
Yeah, and I think
there's
a difference between comfort and uncomfortable and being familiar.
True, that's exactly the word I meant to use.
We're
familiar.
Okay, we've
yes.
been here before.
Absolutely.
Okay, well now, once you are able to, you know, I mean, are you able to break that? I mean, how can you break that, Jennifer? If somebody comes to you and says, okay, I realize I'm going out with guys who neglect me. You know, they're never available, or they're only available maybe financially, or maybe they're only, they want to have sex, but I really want more. I don't know what to do. What suggestions would you give to someone, Jennifer, if they came to you? And is it different if it's a man or is it a woman, or is it just
mm-hmm.
a human? And you
no, I think it is more of a human experience. I do a lot of family of origin work, and you kind of draw up this thing where you kind of draw up a family map, and it's called a genogram, and we kind of go through and look at the patterns and the relationship dynamics and see how they're playing out currently in their intimate relationships and try to figure out what those things are about. And sometimes some healing has to happen, whether there was some neglect with the parent, and it has to be something that's, you have, one, become aware of it, have some insight about it, and make conscious decisions, because like Dr. Pearl said, it is very much so on an unconscious level. That we kind of reenact these relationships and behaviors.
Mm. Dr.
Yeah,
Pearl,
and
I'm going
to
ask
kind of
you.
Piggyback on, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, go ahead. Mm-hmm, go ahead.
To kind of piggyback on what Jennifer is saying is like people, it's hard for them to recognize that you get something out of unhealthy relationships.
Absolutely, yeah. It's satisfying.
You know, so my question is, what are you getting out of that? Because B.F. Skinner said, all human behavior can be reduced to one or two motives. Either we do things to seek punishment or avoid, to seek reward or avoid punishment. And if we keep doing things, it's because they allow us to do both.
Mm.
So I'll frequently talk to someone and say, well, what are you getting out? I'm not getting anything. Oh, okay, it sounds good. But what are you getting? What are you avoiding having to deal with? What do you mean? Well, if I get rid of them and they're unhealthy, I have to deal with possible abandonment issues. I
mm-hmm.
may not measure
mm-hmm.
up.
Mm-hmm.
I have to deal with a lot of things that I don't want to really think about. So there's something about someone being unavailable. A, I'm familiar with it. I get to hold on to something. I'm not alone.
Right.
So it's like we have to peel back the layers to figure out what are you getting out of this?
Mm-hmm.
Well, okay, let's start with some simple questions in terms of dating. I mean, I know you guys are like deep therapists, so to speak. You're not like, you know, dating gurus on, you know, HBO or something. I mean, you really, on a daily basis, constantly dealing with people's inner issues. But in terms of dating, let's start. Where do I go to find a date? Should I be online? Should I go to the bar? What if I don't drink? I mean, should I go to a sports event? Should I go to poetry reading? Should I allow somebody on the street to just start talking to me? And should I be receptive? I'll start with you, Jennifer.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think is the best place to find a date?
I would say find a date. Well, first of all, the first person you should be dating is yourself. I really think it's something that I talk with my friends about, I talk with colleagues about, I talk with clients about, is that you really need to have a relationship with yourself first. If you're able to enjoy yourself, love yourself, be in love with yourself, then you can kind of present the best you when you're out in the world. But I would say it really depends on which environment you're comfortable in. If you're, you know, enjoy books, go to a bookstore. You know, if you enjoy going out and being social, maybe being out in somewhere that's social environment, whether you drink or not, might be a good place for you to meet someone. I think it's very individualistic.
Tasha Perot, are guys comfortable at this day and age with women approaching them, or should I have a girlfriend? She says to me that she does not approach guys. Never. They have to approach her. I mean, Dr. Perot, is that like a good thing? Should people just stand back? Or are guys receptive to aggressive women? And it's not in a bad way, but just, you know, hey, how you doing? You want a drink? Or, hey, what's your name? Is that odd for guys to be approached?
Yeah, I think that could be kind of awkward. But I think something that you alluded to in the last question is kind of helps ease that discomfort. Get yourself in situations that work for you. Like, I'll have clients that come in and they're very isolatory people, but they're very artistic. And I'll say, well, go take an art class.
Right,
because
exactly.
In an artistic environment, in an art class, they're going to have this creative work, and the whole class is going to talk to them.
Mm-hmm.
If you're a sports fan, obviously I would say a sports bar, but what type of people do you want to attract? I think if you put yourself in better situations, you might not deal with that as much, but once the conversation is started, I think in today's society, it's safe for a woman to invite a man to do something. She might not be as aggressive, but, hey, let's catch coffee or let's study for that test or whatever the case may be. If you're in the right environment, I just think it makes it a lot simpler a process and less intimidating.
Yeah, and there's nothing wrong with saying hello to someone if it's someone that you're interested in. It's not as if you're asking them on a date or you're, you know, asking them for an engagement. You're just, you know, creating conversation, just saying hello, you know, flirting. I don't think there's anything wrong with that.
Well, you know, the big question always is who pays for the first date? Jennifer, I mean, and this goes to an issue of communication, I think, if I'm correct, because some people assume that the guy's going to pay, or some people assume that whoever asks is going to pay. And then some people think, well, I shouldn't have to pay. Jennifer, what's your thought about this issue?
Well, I think that one word that you said that stood out to me is assume. I don't think people, when they're starting a relationship, should assume anything, because you have two separate individuals who are coming to the table with their own stuff, meaning their own baggage, their own expectations. And I think just merely asking, you know, if you go on a date, if in your mind you would like him to pay, why not still offer? You know, you are an adult. You're an independent person. You can offer to pay. And if the other person is, you know, let's just say in terms of a heterosexual relationship, is a gentleman, and he ends up paying, then that's fine. I think that person will possibly, you know, think it's very kind of you to offer and consider his finances. But, you know, if he offers to pay, let him pay.
Dr. Perot,
it has to really be okay with you.
Yeah. I think that's great advice, actually. I know it's a turn-on if a woman
says,
you know
what,
let me get the bill. Even if I don't let her get it, I'm just like, wow, that really blows me away. It's I have someone here I could work with type of a thing, whereas if the assumption is that you invite me out and I've had it happen to this very expensive restaurant and at the end you're looking at me to pay, well, I may even pay, but I may end up leaving and it cost you more than I paid, if that makes sense.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So now, Dr. Perot, should the people go to each other's house after the date? How intimate should you get? Like, is it the first night? And when I say intimate, it could be emotionally, because how much information do you share about yourself on the first date?
Mm-hmm.
And then also physically, Dr. Perot, how close should you get? How fast should you get close? I guess that's really the
question. I think on this one, I'm going to avoid a silver bullet answer. And say, you know, really, it's a comfort level. I mean, there are some women I can meet, and they jump in bed with you the first night, and you just love them. And other people, it takes 6 months, and it's just not there. I mean, but with that said, I think you have to really say, okay, you know what, I don't want to be judged, but people are judgmental.
Yeah.
You know, I know if I'm very aggressive with a woman very early, she's going to see and experience me in a certain way. And I'm going to experience her in a certain way. As a rule, I think I tend to think, okay, after we're intimate, if we haven't established certain things, it's been my experience, those things never really get established.
Yeah.
So if this is someone that I seriously wanted.
I do agree, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, so if this is someone I really want
to
have.
Go ahead. No, I was going to say, what type of things need to be communicated before you say you sleep with somebody? Or what issues do you think are important that should be brought up?
I think just even experiencing rapport and trust, and those things I don't know that you can conversate about to experience. I mean, I don't know you. I just gave you my body. What does that really say about me? And don't get me wrong, I'm not saying being a prude or a conservative, but it's like I don't know you.
Right.
So it's like if this is someone that I really want to be in a serious relationship and I want to get to know, we're not going to probably develop that once that happens if there's no foundation at all. That's just if this is someone you want to be in a long-term relationship to be aware of.
Well, Jennifer, let me ask you, when should they meet your friends and family?
I think friends, you can introduce friends pretty early. I think when you're dating someone and trying to get to know them, it's important to see them in different situations and letting them interact with your friends, letting them interact, you know, bringing friends together. I think that's a good way to see their personality, how someone can you know, do the small talk, kind of work a room if not, or if they shy away from it. And if your friends are people you trust, you know, you'd hope that that is the case, that to some extent they can give you some honest feedback. So, I mean, in terms of friends, I think very soon. Family, I think it depends on the relationship. You know, there's some people who, like, do not bring anybody home unless it's someone that you have serious intentions about, where other families are very much more relaxed and, you know, it's very laid back.
Dr. Perot, what if one party asks the other party to come to meet their family and you're not ready? How can you communicate to the person without maybe offending them that, you know, well, I'm at one point, can we slow it down? Or how does the person communicate without hurting the other person?
Yeah, and I think that's kind of the rapport part that I was talking about developing beforehand. Where you can say, I mean, a real relationship is going to be tested through rejections and what happens after that happens. I mean, hopefully you're at a place where you can be honest and say, look, I like you, and you're someone I definitely hope to get to know better. For me, that's not how, you know, my comfort level is right now. But it's not to say that I wouldn't like to do that one day. I'm just not ready right now. I have this couple, and he was from Nigeria, and she was American. And she was totally in love. They had been dating over a year. And she wanted him to meet her family. And he said, look, I want to spend the rest of my life with you, but in my country, until I show up with a ring, I better not go home with anybody.
Right.
It's a cold. So it's really figuring out, is that a rejection? In some cases it is, in some cases it's not. But you have to have a rapport with a person and know them to be able to have a context for what that means.
Mm-hmm. And that takes time.
Yeah, that takes time. And what do you think the top three problems that let's move on to about commitment in terms of committed relationships. What do people come in your office with? What are the top three things people come in your office with?
I would say the number one is just flat out communication. Communication is always an issue. Frequency of sex is an issue. And I would say those are probably the top two.
Dr. Perot, how about you? What problems, what are the top problems that people come to you with?
I think ultimately people are pretty good at negotiating and working things out until it becomes emotional. And when it's emotional, people really have challenges because emotionally emotions come with blind spots. So if I think you should come home and hang out with my family and we're going to spend every vacation and we've been married and I grew up in this family where we're a big tribe and a clan, and you grew up with just you and your brother and you're not used to all that, that's going to cause a lot of emotional problems because it's like, well, what's wrong with you? You don't value family? Well, yes, I do. I just don't want to be with your family every weekend. So it's what happens when it's emotional. It's like, how do we compromise? Because you're talking about beliefs and people's values, and that gets really personal.
Mm-hmm. Well, let me ask you, Jennifer, I mean, if somebody's dating and they're in a committed relationship, is it okay for people to go out by themselves? I mean, me personally, I go everywhere. I could go anywhere. The only place I usually don't go is a club or something. But even when I'm in a relationship, I still go out and do things. If I wake up this morning and you don't want to go, I'm like, okay, cool, I'll talk to you later. Not as a slight to that person or anything, just as a, like, okay, well, this is, you know, what I'm going to do today, and I'm very comfortable with that. Some people aren't comfortable, but does that then cause the problem of people losing themselves if they don't spend time in their own interests?
Yeah, I mean, just because you're in a couple doesn't mean you're no longer an individual. I think being able to cultivate your personal life or your individual life actually can enhance your couple relationship or your intimate relationship. And being able to go out alone, whether that's going to the mall, going to the bookstore, wherever. I mean, I don't know if you mean when you say going out, does that mean like going out to a club or to the bar? You mean shows a lot of that you can spend time with yourself. I think in some ways that can enhance the relationship. I think a couple would need to negotiate if it's terms of that person going out alone, let's say to a club or to a bar or something like that. That might look a little different.
Dr. Perot, what about the situation of only going out with friends who are couples and not going out with single people? I remember meeting some people who only go out with other couples. Because there's this fear of going out with a single person and the single person is going to take your partner. What's your thoughts, and has anybody ever come to you with that issue?
I think I hear it a lot, and it's funny because my single friends are a lot tamer than married friends, to be honest with you.
Oh, okay.
No, I know this sounds bad, guys. I hope you don't think I'm telling on you. But, I mean, I'd get together with some of my married friends. They don't get out, and they're much more...
Oh, my goodness.
You
yes.
Follow what I'm saying? My single friends have been there, done that. But
I need to get this in while I'm out.
If someone can't be themselves, you're going to have problems in the relationship because if people feel like their freedom and their liberties are being taken away from them and they can't be them, it's going to undermine the rapport and the trust in the relationship. So you really have to kind of find a way to work out a deal and let a person be who they are. Like I'll frequently see where introverted people marry extroverts.
Mm-hmm.
And introverts want to be home all the time, and their family is everything to them. And extroverts, hey, they need people to recharge their batteries.
Yeah.
And
right.
I've just seen where that's just such a problem, and it's not really personal.
Let's talk about sex. We only got a couple minutes left. And like you said, Jennifer, that's one of the top problems that people come in to your office with, frequency, I mean, maybe types of sex, you know, in terms of bringing in toys or bringing in people or different locations. What do you say to people if, like, say, for example, one partner only wants to have sex 3 times a week and another partner wants to have it every day in the morning because that's the best time for them? How do you counsel people, like, how do you, like, teach them to negotiate that issue?
Right. Well, I think couples should be, or individuals should be aware that a sexual relationship can change throughout the relationship, whether it's a dating relationship or a married relationship. I don't know if this is going to sound right, the use of sex or how sex is expressed can change. You know, at times when you're first dating, it's you know, you're like, oh, we used to do it once a day. And once you're like 5 years in, it's only twice a week. And then once you're married, maybe once a month. I think communication is a big thing. I hear couples saying if we talk about it or if we plan it, it doesn't seem as romantic or as intimate. And I think communication is the key, and couples need to find a way to negotiate and to be able to meet the needs of their partners, the one who may want it less or even the one who may want it more.
Dr. Perel, what if I want to bring another person into the bedroom with myself and my partner? How do I, first of all, I mean, do I then just stop talking to my partner if they don't want to do it? Do I, you know, berate them? How often should I bring it up? When should I let it go and realize that my partner doesn't want to do this?
I think it's a question that we see more than people realize would imagine. For me, the question I ask is one that comes up a lot. Can you handle that, and can they handle that? You know, and what happens once Pandora's box is open? Some people are free spirits. They could, you know, it doesn't affect them in that way. Other people, wow, I want to be with this person without you. Does that mean they're cheating? You know, it's like, how do we kind of establish the rules? I think if you are open to that and that's something that's important to your sex life, I think you need to introduce it as early as you feel comfortable and let that person make an informed decision. Just recognize it doesn't always play itself out so neatly, and everybody can't see you with another person and then not be affected by that.
Well, I know I had author Rebecca Walker on, and she had a book called One Big Happy Family, and she had all different types of families in there. And one of those families was an open relationship. They were married, but they had other partners. You know, that is something new. That was something new. And I know in the news they talk about Jada and Will Smith having this open relationship. I mean, but doesn't that can be different for every person, right, Jennifer? I mean, every couple, when you say open, I think it goes back to the communication. How open and how many people and do they meet the kids? What is your thought about that, Jennifer?
Yeah, I think you hit it on the head when saying communication. I think open relationship can mean different things to different people. I mean, initially when, you know, what it means to me could mean something completely different than it means to you. But I'm going to defer to Dr. Perel on this one.
Yeah, I did an article, I think it was November, in Ebony, that talked about that issue that's a little bit more in depth if anyone out there wants to read up on that. But marriage is kind of what two people agree it is. You know, I've had people that were very open and it didn't work because one of the people changed and they couldn't handle it. And, you know, I've seen different results as well. So it's what two people agree upon. If you're okay with that and your spouse is okay with that, fine. Create the rules and enjoy it for what it is. If that doesn't work for you, I don't encourage you to say it does. And I've seen people do that thinking the other person would change. And I think that's where I've seen the most problems. I know I had a woman who said, well, he'll change, and he never did. You know, that was how he rolled. That was important to him. And she was just constantly bitter. And one of my conversations with her is you have to ask yourself, are you compromising who you are? Mm-hmm. And if you are, this just isn't going to work. So it's not so much having the open relationship that was the problem. It didn't work for her. And if it doesn't work for you, it doesn't. And if it does, and that's how you define marriage, I don't feel I'm at right to judge you or anyone else's to say what works or doesn't work. I think that's better than, I think it was Monique who said, I don't care, in this particular article that I wrote, I don't care if my husband is unfaithful. It's more important to me that he's honest with me. And if he's honest about it, I'd rather have that than be with a liar. So different people get different things out of open relationships.
Yes. Well, we could go on, and I just want to thank both of you for being on the show. We only have about a minute left. Jennifer, real quick, what are your top tips for people trying to maintain a relationship, a healthy relationship?
Like I said in the beginning, is have a relationship with yourself. Do not lose yourself in a relationship. Being able to cultivate who you are will contribute to the relationship. Continue to listen to yourself. Many times we run through stop signs when starting relationships, and because we're afraid to acknowledge what we want or don't want to judge the other person, and continue to communicate, not only just verbally but non-verbally, sharing information about yourself to create that emotional intimacy and have fun.
Dr. Perel, your top tips for creating healthy relationships?
Well, first, follow Jennifer. That was great. I think the next thing I would say is be friends, you know, and that sounds like a simple thing, but friends forgive each other. Friends allow each other to be different. If you got a friend who's an extrovert and you're an introvert, you say, go out and have fun. We'll get together later. somehow when we say I do or we get emotionally involved, we feel all these insecurities and all these emotions, and it's easy to run that person away or really rob the relationship of joy. So I say be friends. Allow each other to be different. Celebrate each other's differences. If there's something that is different, go out. Give it a shot. And that's what we do with our best friends. So that's my advice.
Wonderful. Well, thank you again, both of you, for being on, Dr. Perot and Jennifer. Thank you so much. Check out your article. You said in Ebony, you had an article in November 2011?
Yes.
And also you did something on Essence. You did about getting ready, marriage prep in Essence. You were interviewed.
Exactly,
yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I also want to encourage everybody to check out Counsel for Relationships. Jennifer Jones, who's a licensed clinical social worker, is here because the Counsel for Relationships, which is based in Philadelphia, brought her to me. So thank you to them.
Joy, I actually have an article coming out, since we're talking about articles, coming out in the April issue of Essence of Why Do I Choose Men Who Cheat? Should be interesting. Yeah.
Juicy. All right. Well, you guys know you can follow me on Twitter, at Joy Keys, and you can become a fan on Facebook. Just look up Saturday Mornings with Joy Keys and send me an email. I would love to hear from you. My email address is SaturdaysWithJoyKeys@hotmail.com. Coming up this Saturday, wow, ex-Black Panther and now professor Jamal Joseph talking about his book Panther Baby, and author Rebecca Walker on talking about her new book called Black Cool. So you want to check that out. That's this Saturday, February 11th. Thank you again, Dr. Perot. Thank you, Jennifer.
Thank you.
Have a good night.
Bye-bye.
If I wasn't there when he called, he got mad.
She was always telling me how to dress.
Every time it was like, is he hitting on you?
She kept telling people I was cheating on him.
I didn't want to lose him.
Man, was she jealous.
It was like I couldn't go anywhere without him.
She didn't want me to see my friends.
He cares about me so much. I guess that's why he hit me.
Dating abuse can take many forms. Some so subtle, your teenager may not even know it's happening. That's why parents need to know what dating abuse is and how it can start, how you can spot the signs, and most important, how you can help prevent it. So talk to your teen today. Help them understand how dating abuse can happen and teach them to choose respect in all their relationships and to expect no less when they're dating. To learn more about the warning signs of dating abuse, go to ChooseRespect.org. A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention.
Respect.
Give it. Get it.